two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes!
Yes! The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Unrivaled 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to my right. As usual, thanks for being with us on the program. We've got a lot to get through here. We've got tons of things to talk about. As always, the show is brought to you by G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. Emphasis on the tasty and the quick part, too. Really, really good. If you're looking for that meal replacement, G2G Bars are where it's at. Proud sponsors of Unrivaled. We appreciate their business. Let's jump in here. Let's get to the top of the show, as we always do, every hour. It's The Cut. Let's do it.
There we go. The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made The Cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The Cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. uofuhealth.org. SunDevilSource.com is where you can see his byline. Chris Cartman joining us on the program covers the Sun Devils. Chris, quite a tumultuous week for the Sun Devils and for this program. What's it been like just in the last, you know, I guess it's less than a week since Herm Edwards was dismissed from the team? Where's everybody at right now down there in the community?
Yeah, never a dull moment, right?
Right.
We like to call it always something university, ASU. kind of suspected for a long time now that this would be Herm Edwards' final season at ASU. NCAA investigation has been going on for 15-plus months. Recruiting has really fallen off a cliff for the Sun Devils. They had three coaches resign. Two others were fired for cause. They lost their coordinators. They had a lot of guys left in the transfer portal. And so it was surprising to some degree that Edwards was kept on heading into this season. Thought the team actually looked pretty decent in camp and had a chance against Oklahoma State. Some discipline and penalties and some offensive issues, I think, kept them from being in that to the wire. I didn't really see that game coming against Eastern Michigan. I mean, that's like – that's about as bad as it gets. It's a fifth best Division I team in Michigan. They're not in the top 100 D1 teams. ASU is a 20-point favorite. And there was a really disbelief kind of in the stadium at what we were seeing as it was unfolding. And that really even included Michael Crow's luxury suite, ASU's president. He expressed some real frustration with what was going on. I took a video on the field, which I have done regularly, of Michael Crow, Ray Anderson, and Herm Edwards meeting. It was very terse. I'd done that many times before because it was our normal pattern after home games. I had no idea that it would be Herm Edwards' last time as ASU's coach. That went viral, like right. 3 million plus views. I think everybody saw it. And but then I found out really the next morning he didn't come into the office initially. And then when he finally did, there was closed door meetings and word started to trickle out. And I was able to break the news that he'd no longer be at ASU.
Well, that was kind of interesting that because everybody did. They just thought, oh, my goodness, the AD and the school president on the field. And because of that, I mean, I would assume that. Yeah, everybody just thought that that never happened or that they just told him right there, hey, pack your stuff up, which I think obviously wasn't the case then. They wouldn't do that there, but that it was their you know, habit for after games. I think a lot of people just mowed right past and went, well, that's a weird moment.
What did they say, though? I mean, does anyone know or can you speculate?
Yeah, so,
it's certainly an odd thing to have happen.
Well, so I had done that like a bunch and pretty much something that just ASU fans would see and then comment about their dissatisfaction about the coaching situation or the administration with Ray Anderson. So I thought it would be just like that, where, you know, it gets several thousand views and that's kind of, and people comment and whatever, and that's the end of it. Yeah, I wasn't going to speculate on the tweet or anything. It was terse. Basically what happened is Herm Edwards came over. He said they kicked our butts. And then he shook hands with both of his bosses, and there was not a lot of words exchanged really after that. I think Michael Crow said one thing, Ray Anderson said one or two things, and Herm Edwards, you know, basically was like, you know, going to go talk to the team or whatever. And then Anderson went with him, which he had done quite a bit in the past, and that was it. And I don't. As far as I have been told, and I didn't learn anything that indicated that Michael Crow had already told Anderson at that point in time that Herm needed to lose his job or that Ray Anderson had already expressed to anyone that that was going to happen. I think it was just sort of they had additional conversations later that night in the morning, and then that's kind of when they made the determination.
When we interviewed Herm Edwards at Pac-12 Media Day, he just seemed resigned then. And normally he's always we look forward to speaking with him every year. He's engaging, you know, and I know him on a certain level. And he just this year he just kind of seemed almost defeated before the season started. You mentioned that the team looked pretty decent in camp, but did you get and then you also mentioned that, you know, this was going to be his last year. Do you think he knew that? Do you think the team knew that? Do you think that had something to do with maybe the play of the team?
I think at some level he knew that that was likely, but I don't think that the players knew that, and even the staff, I'm not really sure. It didn't seem like that really impacted their preparation that much or anything. The issue with Edwards, and I totally agree that he didn't have nearly as much pep or energy. I think the pandemic took some stuff out of him, and then the investigation. It was like this cumulative that thing that just built up and sort of took the fire away from him, if you will. But I think that their discipline has been so poor and their detail orientation has been so poor because he's known as a player's coach, but his desire to let the players kind of self-police and be in charge of things, it didn't work well, and it's actually spiraled in a negative direction when they really needed a lot more discipline and somebody who was holding it all together. And when ASU had a bunch of their coaches that left in 2019, especially Danny Gonzalez, who's the head coach at New Mexico now, they were sort of the binders of what sort of brought some structure and discipline and whatever. Antonio Pierce was always a recruiter, and I think he's a pretty good football coach, but he didn't add to the discipline aspect. Right. And so things kind of fell apart in the last couple of years in that regard.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Cartman joining us here covers ASU and is well plugged into that. And you probably saw his viral video of Herm Edwards coming off the field chatting with the athletic director and school president down there. And obviously it was after everything. Like when that video, it's not like people saw that video and went, ooh, because I think that they, if people were familiar with the situation, they'd see that you've taken videos like that before and then, you know, no harm, no foul. But it was after he was let go that people go, did you see the video from the night before? They probably fired him right then. And so the all that stuff is going on, Chris, and yet this team has to buck up and play some football now, and their new interim head coach has a tall task ahead of him. I don't know how you how the team feels going forward and how much of a gut punch it is, even though I think a lot of folks knew that, like you were saying, people knew this was probably going to be Herm's last kind of ride here, but maybe just not this last week.
Yeah, and Sean Aguano, the interim head coach, I've known him for 15 or more years since he was an assistant coach at Chandler. So I've seen him come up through the ranks. He's a really great guy, heartfelt, wears his emotions on his sleeve. I think he'll do a good job of sort of getting kids to buy in and understand, hey, look, he keeps saying there's zero and zero in Pac-12, and, you know, why can't they kind of get it together? They like some of the talent that they have, and they think that there have been some good signs in some of their games. So it's just a monumental sort of a task. They were running a lot more in practice. You could tell that they were trying to sort of prod them into being in sort of a better sort of mental state and get some toughness and inject a lot more energy. They were playing a little more up-tempo with their offense, which is a huddling sort of methodical style that was brought with Glenn Thomas. So Aguano's putting his stamp on it. Utah is an extraordinarily well-coached football team. I've been saying this for a very long time. I think Kyle Whittingham is incredible, the best coach in the Pac-12, in my opinion. And ASU got their butts kicked last year on the second half of that game in Salt Lake City, which in a lot of ways I think was the most important game of the Herm Edwards era, because had they won that game, they would have been really well-positioned to win the Pac-12 South. And who knows, maybe what if they would have been able to sort of come out of the tailspin that really followed. But this is going to be just an enormously difficult game for them. It's hard for me to figure out a way that they're going to win.
You know, you saw this a year ago with Nick Rolovich at Washington State, where a coach is let go for whatever reason, and, you know, early on in the season, and they seem to respond to it. Are the pieces in place within the team, the makeup of the team, the coaches, to have a turnaround? And if so, what's a likely scenario? Like, is it possible this week, or is it going to take some time?
Yeah, they do have pretty good pieces. And part of what was so just perplexing against in their last loss was they couldn't stop the run, and this is a team that figured to have its strength be its front seven on defense. And so they didn't make adjustments, and it was weird. They have a very good defensive line coach, Robert Rodriguez. He was with the Vikings. Donnie Henderson had been an NFL coordinator in the past. He coached ASU secondary during the Rose Bowl. And so I don't know how they're going to be able to respond, but between Merlin Robertson and Kyle Soley and Nestis Olvera and some of their Trevez Moore and Anthony Cooper, they have a lot of experience up front. And I think that their offense has a very good run game. Absolutely. Xavion Valadez, he's a great player. The leading active career rushing leader in FBS, had 100 yards plus against Oklahoma State on the road. So they have the ability to put together a competitive game. But the discipline and the detail orientation, they're not nearly good enough, and you just can't fix that in 1 week.
Chris, one of the things that we've been wondering about with this ASU team has always just been a place that, like you were saying, always something university, there's just always something that's going on.
I mean, they could be the University of Spoiled Children. It could be worse. USC.
It could be USC. No. But that's the thing is, I think a lot of people see how much potential is there in Tempe, and that it's just another just falling short, and even more so this time around, because now the rest of the people are going to have to probably deal with the sanctions that came from this era.
Yeah, and this is why ultimately most of the frustration in the fan base and boosters is more so on Ray Anderson and even Michael Crow, because we've seen cycles now of this for many years with the same leadership, where they spin their wheels after they make these different types of coaching hires, but they never really get what's needed from an infrastructural standpoint or resourcing, both in terms of funding their immediate coaching staff and then also their support staffing. And a lot of coaches have gone on out of ASU in recent years to be very successful in other places. You look at Mike Norvell. You got the Oregon's head coach, Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
You got Florida's head coach, Billy Napier.
Yeah.
So there's like all these guys that have come out of ASU. I think there's like six or seven current Division I head coaches that have been at ASU in the last 10 years. But why are they leaving? Why are they, are their positions not being well trained and developed and then backfilled by other people coming up the ranks behind them? Those are questions that nobody really has been able to answer with any confidence. And ultimately, I think it's because the administration up to the president, they haven't done a good job understanding the specifics of what's really actually needed to get something together that can get some traction.
When Utah entered the Pac-12, they made the commitment, said we want to compete for championships, and they came right out and said it, and they said we're gonna invest in people and we're gonna invest in infrastructure, and the facilities at Utah have just like gone through the roof, and they've kept and hired quality folks. Is that mindset at ASU? Do they really want to have a good football program? Do you get a sense of that, or where are they?
Well, they did do a very good job of paying for an upgraded football facility that was basically opened in Todd Graham's final year. He personally took a lot of onus on that with getting booster support and whatnot. But then when he lost his job, I feel like they've sort of been in neutral since then in a lot of ways, especially with their booster outreach, developing key relationships with the people who would be your biggest benefactors. And as I said, they haven't retained enough of their support staff. And Kyle Whittingham is so good because he understands exactly who he needs in the key roles, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, people in charge of your recruiting operation, and player development, and then all the way down through the entire pipeline of the operation to the lowest level people, your student assistants. And those people are being developed and fostered and mentored in all these great ways. And that hasn't happened with any sort of continuity or consistency at ASU. And I don't think that they've had the right leadership administratively and or within football to be able to understand how they do that. And so when they make this next hire, they really need to consider that along with some other core things, which is you have to understand how to have great schemes on both sides of the ball. Utah does that. You have to be able to understand the footprint regionally and how to recruit and build a staff to that. And ASU hasn't done that well enough. And then you have to be able to extract the most of from players, have them willing to run through a brick wall for you while also being disciplined on the football field. And ASU hasn't done that either. So those would be my three core things that ASU needs to try to find that they haven't been able to have in recent coaches.
Yeah. Chris Cartman, he joins us on Unrivaled here as we chat a little bit about what the future of ASU looks like, but also in the short future. We were talking earlier this week with one of Utah's defensive players, and he goes, yeah, we know what we're getting with ASU. I mean, they're going through some tumult here, but football is unforgiving. That was the term that he said. Football is unforgiving, and they got a job to do, and this team is trying to kind of fight back in after that Florida loss into the good graces of the national writers and the attention. And so this is a buzzsaw that's warring up, and it's a bad weekend, I think, for ASU to get Utah.
Yeah, and their coaches are smart. They're going to say you can't take anybody lightly.
Yeah.
They'll say ASU is going to be, you know, fire coming out of their eyes and their ears after Herm Edwards losing his job as a result of not a very good performance, and you're going into maybe a hostile environment in some ways, and ASU wants to exact some revenge after what happened last year in Salt Lake. So, yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. I still don't think it's ultimately going to lead to ASU winning the game and maybe not even being very close. And I think they were at a 13 or 14 point underdog mm-hmm. at home, which that almost never happens in Tempe. And that's right. another indication of kind of how bad things are that you're a 2-touchdown underdog at home in a conference game.
Well, and Utah's played poorly at ASU in the past. So,
yes.
Emory Jones, the transfer from Florida, what's the grade on him so far in the season?
I think he's done reasonably well. There were three missed deep balls in that Eastern Michigan loss where if they catch two of those, and maybe it's a different outcome. Only one of them was an overthrow. The other two probably should have been caught. Emory Jones is a guy who is willing to hang in the pocket and try to wait for route development, even though he's a good athlete and can get out and scramble and make plays. I don't think that they've used him well enough in terms of his athleticism and mobility, in terms of moving the pocket, giving him some on the move RPO actions. He's not the best quarterback in terms of fitting tight windows and intermediate routes, but he does have a very good arm. And when guys are open, he's usually gonna allow them to make the catch. ASU's receivers are pretty average. That's one of the lesser talented sort of areas of their team, but they have been able to get open in some spots, and Utah's great at not giving up a lot of big plays, so I'm interested to see kind of how that shakes out.
Chris Cartman, sundevilsource.com, that's where you can read his byline there and get all of the updates of anything going on there with ASU, and we're looking forward to Utah going down to Tempe this weekend. Thanks for hanging out with us, Chris. We love having you on the program.
Anytime, absolutely.
There you go. Let's take the break here. Got more to go here on the program.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.